This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on June 25th, 2009. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning, everyone. And this will convene the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, June 25th, 2009. I'd like to begin by making an announcement that a little out of order, and it has to do with the matter on the agenda toward the end regarding the Federal Register notice for website and internet communications initiative. And I wanted to do this while the room was relatively full, more than toward the end of the day, after most people can't remember all that occurred. But this particular initiative is one that I'm very pleased that we're going to embark on, and all the commissioners support, and with the hard work of the staff that have worked on this issue. What it does is it announces for the first time an effort to look outside the doors in a formal way at how we can improve our website. Increasingly over the years, all of you that live the life of campaign finance know that our website has increased dramatically in terms of hits daily and certainly seasonally, depending on who the election period. And we find ourselves really at the forefront of needing to look at the latest technology on how we can digest and make understandable the data that comes to us so fast. By this initiative, we hope to look at the all people who use our website, and hopefully attract those that don't daily use our website for information about campaign finance. It's our chief disclosure vehicle, and increasingly so. The amount of pages of data that we have online now are tremendous. And so the purpose of this is to ask everyone to take a look. What is it you like? What is it you prefer us to change? How can we make it better? How can we make it more intuitive? How can we sort our data in a way that would make it easy for you? Should we have some more analytical functions of the kind that some of the foundations and people who write about us look to be able to let you maybe massage the data yourself? So with that, this may put you asleep, because it's principally filled full of questions and potential concerns, but please give your best shot at giving us some input. We'll begin with Neugebauer AO Agenda Document 0935. And we have a presentation from David Atkins and Robert Knott of the General Counsel's Office. Would you proceed, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Excuse me, yes. Commissioner McGann needs to be recused.
Good morning to the remaining commissioners.
The record will reflect that Commissioner McGann is no longer in the room.
Agenda document 0935 responds to a request for advisory opinion filed on behalf of Congressman Randy Neugebauer and his principal campaign committee. The congressman and his family formed a Texas LLC, which then purchased a recreational boat. The LLC intends to rent the boat to third parties, and to that end, it has consulted with Washington, D.C. area boat rental companies to determine the fair market value of renting a comparable boat. Congressman Neugebauer and his committee ask a number of questions related to the use of the boat, including whether the committee may use the boat for events without charge, whether the committee may rent the boat from the LLC at the fair market value rental charge, whether the congressman may use his personal funds to rent the boat from the LLC for his committee, and whether the LLC may rent the boat to other committees, including other principal campaign committees, leadership PACs, and party committees. The draft concludes that the committee's use of the boat without charge would be an in-kind contribution from the LLC that would be limited by the Act's contribution limits. Any additional use of the boat by the committee would be subject to the usual normal rental charges. Furthermore, the congressman would be permitted to use his personal funds to rent the boat from the LLC for his committee. And finally, the LLC would be permitted to rent the boat to other entities at the usual and normal charge. The commission received no comments on this request, and I'd be happy to address any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. Any questions, counsel, from anybody, any of the commissioners? I had a problem with a couple of the questions early on, and I'm going to just make the point that I would support the approval of answers to questions 4, 5, and 6, but as 1, 2, and 3, I'm still not prepared to support those. So if someone wants to make a motion. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I understand what your concerns are, and I thought a lot about this one also, and it originally thought I was going to be voting the other way, but as I went through this again last night, I realized that this answer is consistent both with the way I've approached a number of other issues, honoring the whatever legal form an entity takes. I don't usually look behind whether it's an LLC or an S-Corp or an LLP, you know, however the entity organizes itself usually dictates how I will look to this. And even if we were to pierce the corporate veil, so to speak, and look at the family members, I've always taken the position that family members are limited in how much they can give to a campaign. And so you'd get to pretty much the same place. I do think that, you know, these personal use issues are kind of lurking in the background of this case, and I think that's why they asked, because it's he'll be using this in part for pleasure, and in part his campaign committee and other campaign committees are going to be renting it, and you know, while they'll be doing it at fair market value, and that's all appropriate, it does in a sense subsidize his family's boat. And I particularly appreciated the question that Representative Neugebauer asked about using his personal funds to pay the LLC the fair market rental charge for the committee's right to use the boat. That's not required, but it's certainly permitted, and I as I said, I appreciate the sensitivity to the appearance issues that a question like that suggests, and I think that that certainly would, if you were to do that, that would certainly hold to the very highest standards of how to approach this, and would remove any conceivable appearance issues or anything else that are associated with that. So I commend him for and his lawyer for thinking about that and thinking about those issues. And as I said, it's not required, though. It's just, you know, one of his alternatives. And otherwise, I wanted to make that comment and to explain why I'm going to vote for this draft, although I think originally I had suggested that I might go the other way on this.
Just to add to that, that really is the crux of my concern, but part of it also has to do with my concern over a little bit of the inconsistency of the information before us at this point. In the letter itself, it indicates that there's a 60% ownership by the congressman and his spouse. In theory, then one half of that would be 30%. But then it goes on to say in footnote 1 that the 40% is owned by a limited partnership owned by the Congressman Neugebauer and his wife. So in that other 40%, there's an amount that's owed or owned that's unspecified as to amount, right to use, or anything else along that line. So at this point before us, we don't have really an understanding with particular clarity regarding how much is really owned in an equity interest or otherwise by the congressman. The other concern that I have in that regard is the documents that relate to this have not been made available to the commission in such a way that they can be publicly used. And then one of our staff has indicated that they've attempted to obtain documents supporting the relationship of the parties, but that has not been made available. And that always makes it, I think, puts us in somewhat of an untenable situation without more clarity regarding it. There is a representation that the requester's counsel has reviewed the LLC agreement herself and has represented to us that does not address the congressman's personal right to use the boat in any way whatsoever. So we have a representation from counsel, but the documents are not available to us for that purpose. And if they're made available to us, we were told that we could, in any event, make them public. So it kind of hobbles us to be able to discuss what the contents of those might be, unless the documents can be made public if need be. And, you know, for those reasons, I think it's hard to support that, especially when the first question being asked is, may the committee use the LLC's boat for the committee events without charge if such use does not exceed Representative Neugebauer's right to use the boat? And we have a representation by council that the documents before that the council has reviewed says that there's no such information provided. The requester's counsel has reviewed the LLC agreement herself and has represented to us that it does not address the congressman's personal right to use a boat in any way whatsoever. So because of the uncertainty there, I can't support paragraphs 1, 2, and 3, the questions that are asked, but certainly the more generic ones in questions 4, 5, and 6 I support. So I think for the record I will say that, but I think that we've understood that rather than trying to have bifurcated motions, I'll vote opposed to a motion to support the whole opinion, but for the record that it's only as to questions 1, 2, and 3. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move, therefore, that we adopt Draft Advisory Opinion 2009-07 as set forth in Agenda Document Number 09-35.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion passes 4-1. And Commissioner Weintraub can, as I understand, is recused from the draft opinion 2009-11.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to go.
And the record should show that Commissioner Weintraub is leaving and Commissioner Gann is returning.
Okay. I'm not leaving the room, though. I'm just going to sit down there.
Mm-hmm. For the record, Commissioner Weintraub is no longer at the table, but is still in the room, but recused from this matter. We have Joshua Bloom and Robert Knopp. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you are aware from last week, Senator John Kerry and his principal campaign committee requested an advisory opinion, and you have before you agenda document numbers 09-32 and 09-32A. Which provide three possible responses and are designated drafts A, B, and C. Consideration of these drafts was held over from the Commission's June 18th open meeting to today's open meeting. Since June 18th, we received one comment from the requester on draft C. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Comments from the Commission? Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you. And I appreciate my colleague's agreement and the requester's acquiescence in our holding this over to this week and giving us an extension on this matter so we could further consider it. I appreciate that. I appreciate the comment that came in that more fully addressed the issue of whether this might be personal use or not with respect to the proposed transaction. In my view, the language that permits funds to be spent for any lawful purpose in the statute is necessarily limited by the prohibition on personal use. So the question for me here is whether this activity is an expenditure, and if so, whether it would be personal use. The threshold question of whether something is an expenditure in past AOs has been limited, and certain types of investments have been read out of the expenditure arena because they are viewed as conversion to a type of cash on hand, and therefore not actually expenditures of the funds. The regs don't define cash on hand, and the reasoning in draft C comes closest to my view of why this activity is not an investment, as that term has been used with respect to the Act. And I recognize that that's not how we colloquially use the term investment, but as I read the Commission's past AOs on this topic, which, you know, we don't have a lot of guidance coming from the statute or the regulations, but the Commission has said that the committees may invest funds if the proposed investment is equivalent to cash on hand, and we've also said in the past that committees may not engage in ongoing business or commercial venture without reporting that income as a contribution. And while I recognize that we have sort of a spectrum, we have savings accounts, which are clearly, you know, permitted and have been for a long time, and we have some other activities that have approved over time as an AO, and we have on the other end truly commercial ventures, which would require expenditures and contributions. And I recognize that this one falls somewhere in the middle. But in my mind, the proposed use of the funds here is not sufficiently similar to the cash on hand scenario to qualify as an investment. And with all due respect to the requester's most recent comment, the idea that the committee may not spend its campaign funds on a business or commercial venture isn't really new. As early as 1983, the commission concluded in Citizens for Emory that it could only rent its computers at a fee-for-service basis if they reported those funds as contributions. And I can appreciate that we have a disagreement over whether this constitutes an investment. But in my view, I reached this conclusion by looking at past AOs as they've interpreted the Act and the regs, and as I view this one in reflecting the my interpretation of the Act and the regs, I simply cannot get there. And I don't reach this decision lightly or quickly, and so I do have to object to the suggestion that this conclusion, while not one that will apparently have a majority view of my colleagues, I don't think that makes it arbitrary or capricious. So I appreciate that we are going to disagree on the law sometimes, and there are many views that could be taken here, and I do admit that this is a close case. With respect to whether providing the funds in this proposed transaction would be a personal use, I do really appreciate the additional discussion provided by the requester. As I said last week, I respect and appreciate Senator Kerry's involvement with veterans issues, and yesterday's submission provides detail and explanation about the nexus between the contents of the proposed movie and his duties and campaign interests. It makes a compelling case that this activity would not exist irrespective of his candidacy or his duties as an office holder. Demonstrating that this is not personal use may not necessarily be the end of the question, however, because I think it does, as structured, the transaction that is before us would anticipate, if certain conditions are met, a return of the original funds plus an additional 20%. And so I think that the receipt by the committee of those funds may have to be viewed as a contribution, and that raises additional issues with respect to whether source and dollar amount limits apply, the tax treatment of this particular LLC. So based on all of this, I'm not going to be voting for any of the drafts before us today, and I appreciate all the work by counsel's office and my colleague's office that have gone into those drafts. But to me, there are still unanswered questions with respect to the potential treatment of those. And there may be another transaction similar to this one that may be entirely permissible under the statute and the regulations. So I don't want to foreclose that possibility by voting for what had been my original intent to vote for draft C. I think the additional information has convinced me that this would not be personal use. But as structured, I don't think that it's clear that this would be a permissible transaction. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any other comments from the commissioners? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just, I want to make sure I heard you right. So you're not in favor of any of the drafts?
That's correct.
Okay. So we're not for anything? We're just against?
That's correct. And okay. I think I was maybe...
Okay. So maybe draft
four,
D.
Or I was right. The
draft D that hasn't been drafted yet. Okay. Well, we talked about this last week, and in my view, not much has changed. I think the comments by the requester are very strong and say it much better than I could hear at the table. So to the extent anyone... reviews the transcript or wants to know what I may be thinking, read these comments, and it really does capture, I think, the issue before the commission. I do want to note, because I appreciate this sense of humor, they were filed at almost precisely the same moment last night that draft C went public a week ago. It was a nice touch.
I got the joke. And it's, you know, illustrating frustration with certain practices by, you know, this method sometimes is very effective. but leave it as it may. Nothing's changed, I think, for me from last week, so that's where I am. Mr. Chairman, what I don't know what to do is, procedurally, what we're actually going to vote on, because they're not four votes, and there's we don't really, we're just going to agree that we can't maybe issue a letter that we're not going to render an opinion in this one, because unless there's a change of heart from what you said last week, I don't see four votes here for anything.
Yeah, I think, and I'd like to say a few things in a minute, but maybe procedurally, the thing that it would be to vote for the draft that you want to support, and if there's a no vote to that, then that's probably as far as we're going to get. Mr. Vice Chairman.
I don't want to cut you off. I know you have some remarks, but just on the procedural point, I'm wondering if maybe what we'll do is instruct counsel to put together a draft saying that the commission was not able to answer your question. There weren't four votes for any position, and then we could make the motion could be on that instruction to counsel, and then that could be our vote.
So the theory would be not to vote for any draft opinion? Not to vote for any draft opinion, just that unable to give an opinion.
We kind of know where we are, right. And rather than go through the exercise of going through votes where we think they're not going to go anywhere, we might as well just go cut right to the chase on that point.
Council?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As to the Vice Chairman's suggestion, there have in the past been precedents where we have done something like that, where there has been a motion to instruct our office to prepare a letter indicating that the commission is not able to issue an opinion and that it closes the matter, and we can certainly do the same sort of letter in this situation if that's the vote that passes.
Now, let me say a few things. I appreciate, again, the letter and the time you took to write that. It did help me a lot on the issue that I raised about the personal use matter. I still am like a Commissioner Bowerly. Let me just say, generically, draft C has some more attractiveness to me, but it wouldn't be mine if I were going to just draft it personally on my own. So I do agree that it's probably better that to just to refer to it generally. But it does cite in there some law that I think we should stay bound by until we decide to depart as a commission in a more organized fashion through rulemaking, or maybe even a formal policy or something to that effect. But traditionally, we do look at investment not in the college dictionary sense, but in the sense of what it's in the campaign coffers for. I know I was criticized by using the word what donor intent is, but it does ring to me. It has some sense of justification to look at it partially from that way, but rather if we look traditionally just at what we've done, the AO 1975-41 Schuster, AO 1980-35 Flora-PAC, AO 1997-06 Hutchison, these are all in draft C, by the way, AO 1999-08 Specter, AO 1976-25, all refer to, for example, such a transfer represents merely a conversion of one form of cash on hand for another. And that's not that we have to live precisely by that, but I still think to depart and invest in the promotional aspects of a movie film moves farther than I'm prepared to go and still call it an investment at this point. Especially, I don't have any doubt, really, that Senator Kerry can make a success of the film, but that's not really our call down the line. It's going to be people who want to invest in films generally, and I think that's problematic. The campaign can never be sure that money would ever come back or when it would come back, and it wouldn't be really able to be sensibly put on any kind of a balance sheet regarding what amount of money really is available to the campaign at any given time. So it goes farther than I'm prepared to go. On the other issue, the thing that troubles me the most is, and I think I alluded to it in the last meeting, and that is paragraphs 2 of both of those agreements. And I recognize that both of one of the agreements may not come to pass, but in each one of those instances, it provides that, for example, in one, notwithstanding the foregoing, in the event that the parties elect to form a single-purpose LLC in connection with a picture, WMF may assign such right, title, and interest into the LLC, thus meaning that in theory, this is in one agreement, and then in the other draft agreement, and granted they're not signed, but with respect to Senator Kerry, all right, title, and interest in the picture in and to the picture, including without limitation the copyrights in and to the picture, shall be owned by WMF. Notwithstanding the foregoing, in the event the parties elect to form a single-purpose LLC in connection with the picture, WMF may assign such right, title, and interest in and to the LLC. In both documents, it provides that ultimately the ownership of the film itself could end up with the committee through an equity interest in an LLC or Senator Kerry, and that brings it farther along than I can support in this particular opinion. So having said that, with some reluctance, I'm not going to be able to support going ahead. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't go through my reasons why I support approving the request that was made in this matter. I set forth those reasons last week, but nothing's changed between this week and last week, so I just wanted to state that for the record. So I would make the motion that we instruct counsel to draft a document indicating that the commission was not able to reach a majority opinion as to the request that was made in this advisory opinion.
Any further comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes 5-0. The next matter is, draft advisory opinion 209-12, Senator Norm Coleman matter. We're ready to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document number 09-34 presents two alternative draft advisory opinions in response to a request by Senator Norm Coleman and his principal campaign committee, Coleman for Senate 08. Senator Coleman has incurred and anticipates he will incur further legal fees in connection with civil lawsuits in Texas and Delaware, several Senate Ethics Committee complaints, and a letter requesting an FBI investigation. Senator Coleman and the committee ask whether the committee may use campaign funds to pay these legal fees. Both drafts conclude that the committee may use campaign funds to pay legal fees for responding to media inquiries about these matters, reviewing complaints to the Senate Ethics Committee, and representing Senator Coleman in an FBI investigation of alleged violations of federal law or rules governing the office of a senator or the conduct of campaigns. The drafts conclude this would not be a conversion to personal use because these legal fees would not exist irrespective of Senator Coleman's campaign or duties as a United States senator. Both drafts conclude that the committee may not use campaign funds to pay legal fees for representing Senator Coleman in an FBI investigation unrelated to alleged violations of federal law or rules, as that would be personal use. The two drafts differ in their conclusions about the legal fees relating to Senator Coleman's possible involvement in the Texas and Delaware lawsuits. Draft A concludes that the committee may not use campaign funds to pay legal fees for representing Senator Coleman in the Texas and Delaware lawsuits, as that would be personal use. However, Draft A concludes that because monitoring those lawsuits contributes in part to legal fees that the committee could pay, the committee may use campaign funds to pay 50% of the legal fees for monitoring those lawsuits. Draft B concludes that the committee may use campaign funds to pay legal fees for representing Senator Coleman in the Texas and Delaware lawsuits, as that would not be personal use. We received two comments on the request and one comment on the alternate drafts. I'm available for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Appreciate that. Any comments from any of the commissioners? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought when I came in this morning I had the potential to be the swing vote on this, and I'm not sure if it's going to work, but I'm going to try anyway. And let me say up front that we've been busy doing a lot of exchanges of language on a lot of different documents over the last couple of days, and I was out of the country for a while before that, so I apologize that I made a proposal that I did not make until this morning, and I apologize to my colleagues for not thinking of this until so late in the day. I think that the scenario that Senator Coleman presents is different from the one that Senator Vitter posed to us not that long ago. Because the underlying allegations in Vitter concern personal conduct. And here, I mean, looking just at the part where the two drafts diverge, the question is, can he use campaign funds for legal services related to this, the Texas and Delaware lawsuits, where if the allegations were established, it would actually implicate Senator Coleman's conduct as an office holder, either because he might have received an illegal gift or in a salary supplement or in some other way, you know, possibly something much worse, but there's certainly nothing in the record or anything that I've read that suggests that. But if these allegations were to be substantiated in this lawsuit, it could certainly embroil him in another ethics complaint and in other problems as a senator. It would involve the logical result of that would be that he might have done something wrong as a senator under rules that only apply to him as a senator. And so it's not just a question of his status of a senator being at issue, but his conduct as a senator, his duties as a senator. So for that reason, I would be inclined to support draft B with one very small change to a footnote, just a little change, because I think the commenters raise a good point about recount funds. And for me, it's important to make clear that we're not talking about his recount funds, and the whatever is donated to his recount funds could not be used for these legal expenses. It would only be funds that are donated to his principal campaign committee. So what I would propose is to change footnote 4 so that the in the second to last line of that footnote, I would replace the word address with allow. This advisory opinion does not allow the use of recount or election contest funds to pay legal fees and expenses related to. And then just to clarify what it is we're talking about, I would suggest that we change that to the lawsuits, investigations, and complaints at issue in this request, because I wouldn't want to inadvertently suggest that he can't use his recount funds for recount litigation or lawsuits or investigations or anything else. We're only talking about what's at issue here. It's a very small change. It's important to me. It's actually, you know, I can't support the draft without the change, because otherwise it leaves this whole issue of whether he could use the recount funds for this purpose open. And I bet the requester would like it if he got that answer. I bet he'd be pretty happy with it. It's certainly the best answer he has the potential to get. And I apologize for just suggesting this at the very last minute this morning, but I'm really trying to get to a place where we can give this guy an answer, and I'm trying to work with my colleagues on that and avoid deadlock, and I'm appealing to my colleagues to work with me on this and give me what is basically a one-word change here. So I would be, if it looked like it might actually get anybody but my vote, I would move draft B with the amendment that I just described. But I don't know if I can make the sale or not. I'm hoping. I'm still hoping, but I leave it to my colleagues.
And thank you, Council. Any further questions? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Although I appreciate the change as a one-word change, one word can do a lot. You know, the word "not," for example.
as one word, but completely changes. We could just change one word at the beginning and put not and change the whole, or no versus yes. You know, words do mean things. The question I have, though, is where is this issue even before us? Where is this in the request? If I read the requester has not asked the question about using recount funds for this. He's asked about his campaign funds, which I see as a different question. So am I missing something? Because I don't see it in the request. Now, I know commenters have brought this up on their own, but with AOs, it's the requester's request, not what commenters want the request to be. We were willing to drop in a footnote addressing the comments and making clear that this AO doesn't address the issue one way or another. If you can point to the spot in the request where the requester has asked this question, then maybe we can come up with a middle ground.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me. I just assumed you were off and running, Commissioner Weintraub.
I got carried away. I appreciate that. But the comments suggest that, and I don't know whether this is true or not. I haven't done any independent research to verify this, but the comments suggest that some of this recount money is ending up in the principal campaign account, and it just, I think the issue is out there now. I don't know what is our timeline on this? When's this one due?
July 7th.
I mean, if you want to, again, I realize I threw this at you at the last minute, if you want to think about it and see whether we can come up with some language that would make us both happy, I'm happy to do that.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond.
Commissioner McGann.
I take that as a response to my question as a no, it's not in the request. And we could spend from now to whenever the end of time is trying to come up with some middle ground on a question that hasn't been asked. Now, AOs are designed to allow people to get real advice in somewhat real time, so that they can then rely on them when they act. And this is a requester that's come in and asked the question beforehand. And I've heard, because I actually go to the oral arguments that our lawyers make to the various courts. I was down in Richmond not long ago before the Fourth Circuit to see actually how these things play out. And there is always the representation made that people can seek advisory opinions. In fact, this came up in the McConnell case. I remember Justice Ginsburg making this point in the oral argument that, well, can people just get AOs? And yes, they can, but if we're going to tie up AOs on questions that aren't even asked, the answer then is no, people can't get AOs. But what this really does illustrate is the need for something that's on the agenda after the AOs. And when we have specific questions of requesters at the last minute, we should be able to ask them, but we see we have an empty table. Okay, but we know counsel to the requester is in the back row, but we can't ask him this simple question. So what you have is one commissioner ascribing intent to the requester saying, well, I'm sure they would be happy with this answer. But we don't really know that because they haven't actually asked this question. So although I hear you saying you want to come to the middle and all that kind of thing, that's not how I take this suggestion. It's a backdoor to an issue that is much more divisive than you suggest, and it really goes back to, you know, the use of recount funds and what is a recount and all that sort of thing. That's not the issue before the commission. And what I would like to do, Mr. Chairman, is actually address the question that's asked. And the question that's asked is, can they use their campaign funds for the activities that they want to ask for? And let's assume you don't think they can use recount funds. Okay, but what's the answer to the question that's asked? Is it a yes or a no? And not a maybe, because it's a yes or no question. Can they use their campaign funds for what they ask? And that's the question before us. And I think we owe it to the requester to answer that question, not a question that hasn't been asked. And at least they can get a sense of where we are on the actual question.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Weintraub.
I hear you, Commissioner, but for me, the answer to that question depends on whether the funds that he's using includes recount funds.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's say there wasn't a recount.
I'm really not trying to fight here. I'm really trying to
find
an answer. Just a second. Are you completed?
I'm done.
Okay. Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. Let's assume hypothetically, since we're in the world of hypotheticals, right now we're going to answer questions that haven't been asked, so maybe I get to ask a question. Let's say there was no recount, so there's no recount funds. Okay? On these facts, what's the answer?
Okay, Mr. Weintraub, if that's who it was directed to.
If there were no recount and there were no recount funds and we did not have a comment suggesting that he might potentially use those recount funds for this purpose, then you're right. Then we would be talking about something different. And by the way, I agree with you that it would just let me finish. I agree with you that maybe we should have switched the order of the agenda. I bet the previous requester would have also liked to have sat at the table, not in a way. But that's why we're doing what we're doing later, because we're so tired of watching people on the outside nod and shake their head and do sign language for us. But, I don't know. Maybe if the requester's lawyer, who is sitting in the back row there, probably concerned at this point, could come down, maybe he would say, we have no intention of using recount funds, and we're happy to stipulate to that, and that might solve my problem. But and this does, I hadn't thought of this way, but I see your reaction, and I can see that this raises another issue that is a bigger issue about whether we should consider anything outside of the four corners of what's in front of us, whether we can read the newspaper, whether we can take in information from that's publicly available. And, I think we can. I always do. But I really did not come in this morning thinking, boy, I'm going to really aggravate my colleagues with this suggestion today. I'm really trying to be helpful, and I'm trying to get to an answer, and I'm sorry if it's not going to work, but really the goals were well-intended.
Mr. McGann.
Thank you. Okay, let me rephrase my question. Hypothetically, if there was not a recount, so there's no recount funds, what would the answer be on these facts? Now, you know that isn't a rephrase. It's the same question because you still haven't answered the question.
I'm sorry. I thought I had answered the question.
No, you did. You had a lot of other stuff about newspapers and everything else, but you don't. It's not my frustration.
Please, Commissioner. I'm not trying to fight with you.
The request, well, it's we owe it to the public to give an answer to the question that's asked. We owe it to the requester. And the recount fund thing is a red herring, and what I'm trying to do is take that off the table and see where you would be to sort of understand your thinking on the issue. If the recount fund issue was not on the table, and I don't think it is, you think it is, we disagree on that, but let's assume it's not on the table, what would the answer be?
I would vote for draft B if that weren't present, but I cannot do it with blinders on and pretend that we didn't receive comments that are also part of the record.
Thank you for answering my question.
I'm always happy to answer questions.
Okay. Any further comments from commissioners? Now, did you make a motion? In all this, I forgot whether you actually made a motion.
I indicated that I was willing to make a motion if it looked like it would succeed, but I'm afraid that it won't, so there's not much point.
We're without a motion. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that there's an effort to see if there can be some way to bridge the divide here. I support draft B, and Commissioner Weintraub brought this to my attention earlier today. And as I've looked at it and thought about it, it's not only been on this matter, but it's been on a number of other opinions as well, where answering the question that's being asked is something that I think is important to stay within those lines. And I think one of the concerns is that if we get outside the area of the request itself, we could potentially have a chilling effect on individuals even bringing forth requests, because if they bring up any issue, then if anything somewhat related to that issue or something that maybe a political opponent could put in, or someone who is some commenter could raise an issue that's tangentially related, and then now we would be making a substantive determination on that related issue, which may lead requesters to want to avoid the advisory opinion request altogether, because there could be some blowback as a result. I know that that's not what the – I don't think that was the intention, but that's my concern about staying within and answering the question that was posed. So for that reason, I appreciate the you know, the offer to change that one word. As Commissioner McGann said, sometimes, you know, a small change can make the difference. I think I remember once hearing that, you know, the phrase sort of really means nothing. But in some cases, it means everything, such as when it's attached at the end of I love you or or you're going to live. So sometimes a very small phrase can make all the difference. But I agree with your analysis on the on the senator that this really to say that Senator Coleman's potential role as a witness in the Texas and Delaware lawsuits would have exist irrespective of his duties as an office holder. I can't subscribe to that. I think the alleged scheme that Mr. Kazemene is alleged to have put into place, it was devised precisely because Senator Coleman, in the performance of his duties as an office holder, doesn't make much money, and he wanted to get money to him. In the draft, it even, I believe, Mr. Kazemene articulately says U.S. senators don't make expletive deleted. And so really, the duties of Senator Coleman as a senator and the issues that could be raised as a result of this lawsuit, I think, did arise as a result of his official duties. And so for that reason, I support Draft B and appreciate the offer to maybe make reach some sort of common ground, but I want to stick with the draft as is.
Yeah, any other comment? For myself, Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with everything that my colleagues, the Vice Chairman and Commissioner McGann, have said thus far. I just wanted to note that while I absolutely agree that we should be answering the question that the requester presents, I think in this case, even in particular, it's hard for me to agree with the language that Commissioner Weintraub presents, as we've discussed a couple of times already this morning, because I think with respect to recount funds, we have incredibly shaky precedents on this, and I don't even agree with the advisory opinion that allowed for the FEC to sort of restrict the way that the recount funds are used in any way, and that's the 2006-24 advisory opinion. So in particular in this subject matter, I'm not willing to sort of make a decision in a footnote when the requester didn't ask it whether or not they're able to use recount funds for this purpose. I don't think the FEC has jurisdiction to decide that, A, and B, I don't think we can restrict it as a legal matter. So in particular in this point, I wouldn't be willing to do that. I'm wondering if maybe Commissioner Weintraub would consider, and again, I think it is a compromise for us to even have the footnote in there to begin with. And that's kind of, we started with without one, and then there is one. But I'm wondering if it would help you at all to just delete it altogether as a possible way to move forward in this case. And another thing to consider is, according to this advisory opinion 2006-24, any committee can set up a recount fund. And then, of course, they can't use the money unless they have a recount fund. So are we going to say in every advisory opinion that comes out between now and then, in the event that you have a recount, or in the event that you set up a recount fund and then have a recount, you can't use it in this way? I mean, are we now going to, every time a requester brings up an issue that wasn't asked, and especially in recount funds, it's so hypothetical, and it's not something I think we want to sort of go down that path. So I'm wondering if by any chance you might agree to just deleting the footnote altogether.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I appreciate the offer. I think the suggestion that we would, you know, now start randomly inserting into every you might set up a recount fund even though you're not now, is a silly one. And I think you know that's not what I'm saying. What we have is a record that includes, you know, we have a process that includes commenters. And commenters comment. They provide us with other information. And the only way that I can, I mean, I appreciate your offer. I mean, I guess the answer is no. That's not going to do it for me because it's already been introduced into the record. And we know he does have a recount fund. So saying, well, what if he didn't have a recount fund and, you know, would you hypothetically want to ban some fund that doesn't exist? I mean, the answer to that is no, because it wouldn't have been raised, and it has been raised. And I understand it hasn't been raised by the requester, but it's there now. So I appreciate the offer to try and take the issue off the table, but I can't for me, that would just be ignoring the issue that's been raised by the commenter, so I can't quite get there either.
Further comment? Well, I will say that this afternoon we hope to, if it doesn't look like it's going to be this morning, maybe do something that might really make a difference, because in a particular case like this, if we were able to talk a little bit about that with the counsel for the requester, we might find ourselves with enough stability in the facts to either compromise or vote easily one way or the other, and hopefully we'll introduce a procedure like that. I know it's been asked for by counsel that I can see here before. It was asked for about 2003, and hopefully we'll get there today and help us get to yes or no easier. For myself, I still believe draft A gets the job done best. The issue on authorizing campaign funds 100% for some collateral litigation to me is not one I can buy off in enough instances to say 100% is always going to be the case. And 50% is a compromise. I grant you that. Some would say zero. Some would say 100. But 50%, yes, Mr. Elias, it is a little arbitrary because in this particular case we found ourselves compromising before, and here we go again looking at that. So I'm willing to continue with the 50% approach. Yes, there are some grave allegations that are made. On the other hand, they may come and go quickly, and the gravamen of the litigation may take different turns and have nothing to do with the congressman or the senator, or whatever public official exists. So in this particular case, draft A does the job for me. Do we want to have a motion one way or the other? Commissioner Bowley.
Well, I had another idea, and staff has suggested another idea, so maybe could we take 5 minutes and trade some language? Maybe
we'll take a five-minute break.
I'd like to answer it if we could.
We'll take a five-minute break. Well, now we can bring Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think this is the first time we have ever taken a break that was shorter than the amount of time that we said we were going to do. Okay. With the able assistance of staff, and I want to thank Ms. Rothstein for just massaging the words a little bit, the proposal would now be, and, well, why don't I do this as a motion? I move that we had I'm sorry. I was not in a motion, but let me explain what it is, and then I'll stop. I was too enthusiastic. I was so excited. The proposal would be that in footnote 4 of draft B on page 6, the second sentence would read, although Senator Coleman is involved in a continuing recount of the 2000 – oh, no, wait a minute. We have to take out although. Senator Coleman is involved in a continuing recount of the 2008 election, period. This advisory opinion should not be relied on as allowing the use of recount funds because it does not address the use of recount funds. And I think, you know, we can all right, we got thumbs up on the other side. Hopefully that'll make the requester happy. I wish we could invite him down to give him the opportunity to give us thumbs up too. But okay, so let me stop now because there are other commissioners who wish to speak, but I'm very pleased that in fact we can give an answer. How wonderful.
Commissioner Bowley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm pleased for you. I really, really, this was painful for all of us. So. And just for the record, I that was how I read your original word change. And so perhaps this is useful discussion to realize that my view of that word change was simply to say that this advisory opinion, whatever it is, can't be relied on to do something that's not specifically requested. And I think that's set forth in our in the regs. I think it's set forth in other places, but I do think that it's worth emphasis in certain instances. With respect to the drafts themselves, I think that they agree as to the permissibility of spending campaign funds for many of the listed expenses. And while I recognize that the two points of disagreement are not insignificant with respect to the items that may be covered, I think there really are only two as I read them. And the first is with respect to the representation in the shareholder suits. And I disagree with my colleague a little bit on how they are interpreted with the comments that Commissioner Weintraub made. I don't believe that for me there's enough of a nexus to find that there's between these the expenses that the requester seeks to pay and for the lawsuits that are shareholder lawsuits and alleged corporate malfeasance on the part of an officer of the corporations. While I know that there are allegations that suggest that the officer took his steps because he may have been motivated by Senator Coleman's status as a member of the Senate and his apparently viewed measly pay, I will simply note for the record that senators make a lot more than those of us sitting up here and many people in this country. But that said, that's all relative, I suppose, as to what someone thinks is a sufficient salary. But here where the lawsuit surrounds allegations about the corporate malfeasance, those allegations and the expenses related to the suit, in my view, would exist irrespective of campaign or official duties. And the second area of disagreement is the one that the chairman mentioned regarding the monitoring of the lawsuits. And I share his view that that is a compromise that has been reached in past AOs. And while I may prefer that no funds be spent on those costs, I think that this requester is entitled at least to the benefit of what other requesters have gotten in the past. And that's why I think draft A reaches the appropriate conclusion with respect to those expenses. So because draft A is first on the agenda, I'd like to go ahead and make a motion, if my colleagues don't object, to moving that draft, understanding, of course, where the votes will be.
Please do.
I would like to move adoption of draft advisory opinion 2009-02 draft A as designated in the agenda document 09-34.
Thank you. Any further comment? Commissioner McGann.
I hate to drag it out, but I want to state why I don't like A. This whole issue of use of campaign funds with respect to paying lawyers has been something that has I don't know if it's really a new thing, but it seems to be that the AOs are, to be kind, all over the place. I read the Colby AO from not long ago as really the more accurate statement of the law, and I note draft A cites Colby at the threshold in a site that says see Colby for the general proposition that you can use campaign funds for campaign purposes or for legal fees in certain circumstances. But once it gets into the meat of draft A, the part that says no, the citations to Colby disappear. It's as if it's not there. And the citations in A sort of selectively pull different AOs here and there. Now, one can take that one of two ways. Either A is breaking new ground and reversing Colby, which I think probably it tries to do that without saying so. Or two, it's to the point now where the commission needs to get its act together on this issue. Because when someone has a problem, they need to hire a lawyer in modern society. And I remember when I was in law school, I read a book by F. Lee Bailey, and his intro was whenever he gets a client, he said he would sit down and they would, you know, sort of have the discussion of whether the person really needed a lawyer, and Lee would ask his potential client, well, you know, did you do it or didn't you do it? And the client would inevitably say, well, I didn't do it, and Lee said, that's precisely why you need a lawyer. If you did something wrong, you know, all the lawyers in the world aren't going to help you. I mean, you may get a better deal. But people need to be able to sort of make decisions in real time. And when you get into sort of micromanaging the ability of people to hire lawyers, particularly public officials who are in the spotlight in a way that very few private citizens can appreciate, you need to respect, one, the ability to do it quickly, and two, that there's attorney-client privilege. And we can't really get into micromanaging what lawyer was doing what and what percentage of time and that sort of thing, which is why I sort of reject the whole percentage thing, as it gets too close to something that I think is very important in our system of justice, which is the attorney-client privilege. And it seems odd that you have to go and sort of explain to the government why you need to use campaign funds to defend yourself from another part of the government. I don't think it really turns on the conduct of the public official, because at the end of the day, it's not the conduct of the public official. It's what people say the public official may or may not have done. And if he didn't do anything wrong, that means there is no conduct. So the nexus to conduct really doesn't work. But that's a long way of saying I hope at some point the commission can address this issue with respect to legal fees and provide some sort of coherent guidance so that folks who need lawyers can get lawyers. and that we don't have to go AO after AO after AO. I know in the personal use regime it is sort of a case-by-case basis, but, you know, the statute is rather broad, you know, lawful purpose. And that was taken out by McCain-Feingold but then put back in. I see that as significant, and I see some of these AOs had drifted towards the and probably rightly so, when the lawful purpose language was struck, they drifted towards a much more regimented view of the use of campaign funds. We're back to what it was before, and I think the commission needs to step up and do something on this front, because otherwise we're going to continue this issue. Senator Vitter had this in the fall. Now we have Senator Coleman with this issue. Senator Kerry just had a personal use issue, not really regarding lawyers, but it's really same church, different pew. So that's just what I want to say, Mr. Chairman. I hope we can work together to come up with some sort of coherent lines on this, so as to not invade attorney-client privilege and other issues that I think are very, very important in our system. So I'm not going to vote for draft A, and that's an elaborate way of saying why, but I appreciate why there could be differences on this as a policy matter, but I think we have to take sort of current law, or at least what the commission has done in other situations, and to me, the Colby AO, which allows for a very permissive use of campaign funds, is to me the operative rule. But other people can disagree, and that's why we have six commissioners.
And not seven. Oh, thank you, Commissioner. It is a tug of war every time you look at something like this to try and figure out the right way to deal with it. And I guess the 50% figure seems like it's kind of a bright line, not exactly right, not exactly wrong, but could be a serious charge, could be peripheral, could go nowhere. We don't want to say nothing, we don't want to say everything, and so we find ourselves struggling. And if we have a pure case-by-case basis, we'll find ourselves, you know, we're trying to figure out between 60% and 40% and 30% and 80%. And that doesn't help either. So, yes, I agree if there's a way we can begin to resolve it. But we do get letters. I think, you know, I'm not sure if it was in this case, but people saying, why are we going to allow campaign funds to be spent for things where felonies are being charged? And I think we are sensitive to, okay, when can this be sufficiently found to have a nexus to duties, not necessarily status, but duties or the campaign activity to justify it, and when can't you? So that's one way of saying it is a problem. We should try and clarify it, probably in regs if we can do that, and get some more, you know, current thinking about what's the best way to go. However, Commissioner Bailey, back to you. Okay. All right. The motion is now pending. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. The motion fails. Commissioner Millenbauer voted in favor, and the other commissioners voted against. We're ready for another motion. Yes, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of Draft B with the amendment previously discussed, and I think just for the sake of perfect clarity, I'm going to reread the entire footnote 4 on page 6 of Draft B of AO 2009-12, so that everybody knows what we're talking about. So the footnote would now read, as amended, this advisory opinion concerns only the use of campaign funds to pay for the requested legal fees and expenses. Senator Coleman is involved in a continuing recount of the 2008 election. This advisory opinion should not be relied on as allowing the use of recount funds because it does not address the use of recount funds, period.
Thank you. Any further comment? You ready for a vote? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Okay. The motion passes 3-2. The vice chairman. Excuse me, 4-2. I didn't mean to leave you out. I was thinking to my left.
It's the six commissioners, 3.
Yeah, right. Commissioner Weintraub, vice chairman. Commissioner Hunter. Yeah, right. And Commissioner McGann voting in favor. Let's see.
Is.
next matter on the agenda is the draft final rules and explanation and justification on civil and monetary penalties, inflation adjustments, agenda document 0933. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. The draft final rules and explanation and justification in agenda document 09-33 would adjust the Commission's civil monetary penalties for inflation in compliance with the Federal Civil Penalties Inflation Adjustment Act of 1990 as amended. That act requires the Commission to undertake these adjustments at least once every 4 years. The last time the Commission undertook this process was in June 2005. We would ask authority to make any technical and conforming amendments to the document as we prepare it for publication in the Federal Register. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be
Thank
happy
you,
to answer
Council.
Any questions.
Okay. Any questions, comments from commissioners? Not? Are we ready for a motion? Mr. Vice Chairman.
I would move approval of the draft final rules and explanation and justification on civil monetary penalties, inflation adjustments, subject to any technical and conforming changes that may be necessary, as set forth in agenda document number 09-33.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. We'll now take up proposed agency procedures, and we'll begin with agenda document 0937. And may I have a motion? Have they submitted documents?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I would like to move suspension of the rules on the timing submission of agenda documents in order to consider agenda documents 09-37, 09-37-A, 09-38, and 09-39.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes 6-0. Just a minute. We're ready to convene, and we'll now proceed on agenda document 0937, entitled Proposed Agency Rule of Agency Procedures Audit Hearings. Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the first of what I hope will be several initiatives, sort of continuing what the Commission had started in 2006 under Chairman Toner, but mostly in 2007 under Chairman Lenhard. And now I really applaud the Chairman Walter's efforts on this. What this document is, and look at 37A, and it's from all six commissioners, which I think is really important to note. That although it doesn't really matter who had the initial draft and who had the idea and all that, I think what does matter is six commissioners have put their name on something, and I think that's an important statement at a time when some like to lampoon the agency for not being able to work together and all that sort of thing. I think this is a testament that that's simply not the case. But what this does is provide those who have been audited an opportunity to address the commission directly. Which I think is important. It's something I thought was important before I joined the commission, and it became more important to me as a commissioner because, as anyone who's watched the commission for a while knows, when audit reports come through the commission, they're discussed, and then the auditors have to defend their work, and the person being audited never seems to really get in the mix to any significant degree. Although the auditors certainly work with them and represent their views in the audit report, there are many times where commissioners end up sparring with their own auditors in public, and that's sort of odd. It's even odder when it generally is on legal issues. What is the law? And audits are not really an opportunity to make new law. I don't think anyone thinks they're making new law, but there's always disagreements as to whether that is what's happening. So I think this will improve that, streamline the process of the commission, increase fairness, due process, that sort of thing, which I think is very important. in an agency that does the sort of work that really gets at the heart of the democratic process. It makes sense that folks involved get to be heard. I don't have much else to say other than I want to thank my colleagues for coming together on this, and again thank the chairman for his leadership on the issue.
Thanks very much. Actually, I'd like to just note the fact that we started under then Chairman Weintraub in 2003, the beginning of a process to look at agency procedures, and then it's continued to a various degree of a success and non-success, but it was re-energized by then Commission, or then Chairman, again last fall, and that's really what brought us to our hearing in January. I am pleased that we are moving ahead. As we said at the hearing then, we're going to continue to have a series of meetings and look at all the issues that people have been saying over the years that we need to look at and vote them up one way or the other, so at least they'll see that we are listening and we're voting, and we may or may not adopt all the recommendations, but at least we're going to give it a shot at trying to address the more serious ones and give a decision one way or the other. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is, I'm really glad we're doing this. This is the process for audit hearings is modeled off of our probable cause hearings, which have been pretty successful, I think. And oddly enough, I remember a couple of years ago going into Commissioner Toner's office and saying, you know, our terms are coming to an end. Why don't we do probable cause hearings before, you know, sort of as a final last hurrah for the two of us before we leave? And, you know, gee, here I am 2 years later, and Commissioner McGann showed up, and I think the first week that he was here, I ran into him in the hallway, and he said, hey, you know those probable cause hearings, why don't we do those in audits? And I said, well, that's a great idea. And so we've been busy, but I'm glad that we were able to get this on paper, and I really appreciate all the back and forth over the last couple of days with exchanges of drafts and words going back and forth, and a few things got left out as the drafts were flying yesterday, and that's why we have 0937A, which is just an amendment of 0937. I did want to ask my colleagues about one issue, because I could go either way on this, but oh my gosh, we've got to put page numbers on it. That's very bad. Maybe we could I guess when it goes in the Federal Register, we don't have to worry about page numbers, so that's okay. I was going to say we could do that as a technical amendment. But looking at the bottom of the second-to-last page, which is about the best way I can describe it here, the very last sentence, the very last carryover sentence, says, materials requested by the Commission and materials considered by the Commission in making its determination may be made part of the public record pursuant to the Commission's statement of policy regarding disclosure of closed enforcement and related files. And there's two issues that I want to raise with respect to that. One is that this we're not talking about closed enforcement, so that citation is probably not accurate. And the other issue there that I think is worth at least thinking about is that it's a fairly broad statement. I'm all for disclosure. I think transparency is great. I'd be happy to vote for it as is. But this is a fairly broad statement that covers all materials considered by the Commission and arguably could include a lot of informal back and forth between the auditors and the audited, and could, our staff has suggested, putting something like this in here could chill some of those conversations. So, as I said, I could go either way on this. I like disclosure, but I also don't want to chill productive working relationships between our staff and members of the regulated community. So I just sort of toss that out there to my colleagues as to whether we want to keep that in or take it out.
Any comment? Commissioner McGann.
I hear the concern. I think the language is drafted in a way to address the concern, think, which is why it's left in the permissive may, not the mandatory shall. It also cites an interim disclosure, an interim policy statement that needs to be memorialized in a rule, which I hope we do at some point in the not too distant future.
And if nothing else, it may kickstart that, because now if there's an issue, we're going to have to just let's fix the real problem, not this problem. But I certainly understand the need for the auditors to, and people being audited, to have candid discussions as to what really happened. Because at the end of the day, we're seeking the truth here, not, you know, it's like a prosecutor's ethical duty, right? It's not to convict, it's to see that justice is done. So we want to get at the right answer and not have it get in the way. I'm not sure there's a better way to put it without and still acknowledge that there are, you know, public disclosure obligations. And the policy statement is not just closed enforcement, it's related files. So that's I see it as broader. And whether an audit's enforcement or not, that's you know, a fascinating academic discussion, not one that I think we need to have today, especially this soon before lunch. Do you have suggested alternative language? Because the intent is not to lock in the auditors or to stifle, and I think this language addresses your concern, because, and you've articulated, I would share the same concern, but in my mind it's not intended to chill that sort of discussion. So to the extent this serves as sort of the legislative history or the sort of explanation and justification for what this language means, there is agreement that we all share that concern. This language is not intended to reach into that sort of conduct, chill that sort of conversation. So if that's sufficient for you to support it, we leave this language, but we're making the record clear.
Could we consider the same way, comment in the discretion of the commission, comment be made? That way it would be clear that it's something we may or may not do in a given case.
I think, again, the word, not to step back, Mr. Chairman, if I can be recognized.
Sure.
Okay. I think the may captures that, and I think that means it is up to the commission. I don't know if we need to alter the language. I mean, we already have an A, and we have six names on this, and, you know, making amendments at the table and all that, but we could always play with if we had to pass it. But my sense is that this does what we're talking about.
I'll vote for it either way, Commissioner Wedren.
I had not focused. See, one word actually can make a big difference. I had not focused on the may in that context, and I think that's right. I think what will happen is as we move forward with this, we'll have to develop at least some internal standards on, because we don't want to have a random process of one committee ends up with all sorts of things on the public record and another one doesn't. So we'll have to. But I think we can develop that as we go along. I'd be comfortable with that. I would suggest that, to avoid the issue of, to avoid actually deciding whether audits are enforcement or not, although I suppose it could be related, I just suggest that after the word record, we put a period, and in lieu of pursuant to, we insert C, the commission statement of policy regarding disclosure of closed enforcement and related files.
Comment on that, or anything else? Commissioner Bowling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see your point as to the may, and I appreciate that, because one of the things I was concerned about was audit files may be incredibly voluminous and may contain material that committees rightly don't want made available to the public, bank records, personnel, you know, lists of personnel, and bank or pay stubs, that sort of thing. So I think I do think it's important that we have a common understanding of what that means. So I think we all appreciate this, the fullest disclosure possible with respect to the committee's sort of privacy and personal identifying information, that sort of thing, and with respect to the process itself of auditing and making sure that committees feel like they can be have candor and frank conversations with their auditors without having those splashed all over the public website. So I think this reaches a good compromise, and I appreciate the conversation about what this really means. And just with respect to the document as a whole, I'm happy to support the compromise that we've reached, the edited version in 37A. There was a lot of work going on yesterday to try to get these documents done, and I appreciate we were able to put one together this morning that had all of our names on it. And I do think we could have reached that conclusion yesterday as well. I'm glad we did today. And I do think that giving people an opportunity to address the commission on these reports is important, and I appreciate the work that my colleagues have done to move this initiative along.
Thank you. Further comments? Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thanks. Just a few very brief comments. I also want to thank my fellow commissioners for all the work that's been done. And as with almost any matter, I worked up on the Hill for a while, and whenever it finally gets to be time for the rubber to hit the road, there's always a scramble of activity. But I think that we've worked well together in order to put together, I think, a product that really will aid the process, I think, on the commission side and on the side of those who are subject to audits. Sometimes there's a criticism lodged that, if you provide too much process, too much due process, it's going to slow and bog things down too much. And I think in this case, it's actually going to do the opposite. I think that by being able to clarify issues early, especially the legal issues, and start to narrow those down at the initial threshold, it's actually going to speed the process along. When I first joined the commission, Commissioner McGann, then Chairman McGann, brought this issue up about the importance of having an audit hearing. And having never represented someone subject to an audit, it wasn't something that I was as familiar with. And so at that point, it was like, well, maybe that's a good idea. I don't know. And then we just had to go through a few audits to realize that oftentimes there are contested legal issues that really are the whole shooting match, and those really do need to be addressed at the threshold level. And I think that this will provide us an opportunity to address those early on, and I think that will then lead to a greater efficiency with how the commission then handles the remaining portion of the audit. But in addition to thanking my colleagues, I want to thank the staff. They do an amazing job, incredible energy levels, incredible work ethic, incredible smarts, and they do a tremendous job. And I think that their efforts and their extremely hard work on this needs to be noted as well.
Thank you very much. Any further comment? I certainly want to share the comments about the staff, and they have really worked very hard on this, and they really work well together, and it's been very helpful to all of us sometimes to bring us closer together very quickly with a lot of really productive conversation going back and forth, as it was the last couple of days. But if I understand it, it was really close to a motion to adopt agenda document 0937-A with the punctuation suggestions by Commissioner Weintraub.
Yeah, I think we ought to let Commissioner McGann make the formal motion.
Commissioner McGann?
Sure. Thanks. I move Commission adoption of agenda document number 09-37-A with one amendment, last page, first line, strike pursuant to, insert a period, two spaces, C, capital S-E-E.
In italics.
Still dictating.
What's that? Pardon?
Back in the practice, you're dictating here.
Right. That's right. And I support that because really Commissioner Weintraub does make a good point. That is really probably the proper site, because if we do change the policy statement, implement a rule, then something's pursuant to that, just legally, I think this is it improves the document. So I'm going to support my own motion, as under Robert's rules I must, otherwise I couldn't make the motion. But that is my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, excuse me, Mr.
Calvert. We were just wondering if the commissioner could add to his motion the authority for OGC to make, in consultation with the commission, appropriate technical and conforming changes and to place it in federal register format.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Calvert. Yes, that is part of my motion. That was implicit.
No, it's explicit.
In my motion.
All right, thank you very much for that clarification. Ready for vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes gladly 6-0. We have agenda item 0738. Relates to response and non-complaint generated matters that will be put over to the next open session. If it's the will of the commission, we can proceed on agenda document 0939, or we can come back at 2:00. We like your procedure. We're going to continue with agenda document 0939. forward to discuss it. Commissioner McGann, do you want to lead off on this?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is another change, and since I've already done the big speech on change, we don't need to do it again. This one addresses advisory opinions, another issue we've spotted where the odd situation, we saw it this morning, people requesting advisory opinions show up and listen, but they really don't get to participate in discussion. Occasionally, the commissioners have questions, and questions that really only could happen probably at the last minute once the debate actually happens. Remember, advisory opinions have to be done in open meeting because it's the deliberation of the commission. So the commission really can't have a six-way meeting behind closed doors and figure out where it is, and a lot of times issues do not really emerge until all six people talk as they must in open meeting. So this is designed to allow requesters to have a say when commissioners have questions, so we don't have the awkward situation like we did this morning with two different AOs where counsel to both requesters were sitting in the audience. And before I got here, this was a situation that I had encountered. And, in fact, it was an AO where I recall sitting in the front row, and Commissioner Weintraub actually pointed out that she couldn't help herself but look at me to see my facial reaction. And that
– Because you're so expressive,
and
Commissioner.
Thank you, I think.
And so receptive.
I'd even be more expressive if I didn't have to lean up and speak into the mic. If we had headset mics, we could really roam about. But I'm confined to the microphone. But this is something that comes up, and I, as a commissioner, see the same struggle that you had had then and have now. So I think this addresses that concern. This is something that was raised in the hearing we had in January. The chairman mentioned that, where we had a lot of ideas presented. The audit hearing was one. This was another one. But we also had comments that said the AO process isn't broken, so don't try to fix it. So this doesn't do a lot of changes. It really addresses, I think, narrow concerns. There's only three names on this document because it went blue before we really got all the changes in there. My understanding, though, there is consensus on this. I don't want to speak for others, but the intent is to make this something that everyone can live with. So simply because there's three names on the cover memo, I, without getting ahead of myself, think to the extent anyone wants to take credit, there's six commissioners and a lot of staff and a lot of work that takes full credit for all of it. So that's my piece, and I will yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other commissioners wish to make a comment? Commissioner Weintraub.
I've got a question, actually. I think that some of our changes sort of – there might have been something that the timetable on the back summary might have – Is this good? I'm sorry. I thought somebody had sent something this morning that one of the changes didn't get incorporated in both places, but I'm told that it has. So never mind. I'll just say that, again, I really appreciate all the work that went in, particularly in the last 24 hours, to exchange words, and this really does represent a consensus and reflects a lot of edits from everybody, and I thought that was a very productive and helpful process. And this is something that I've really been wanting to do for a long time, so I'm glad to be doing it.
Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you to OGC, who did the initial drafts of this and were very helpful and timely in their comments back to us on various drafts. We really appreciate that. I just want to make two minor points. One is that we also put something in here that we hope puts the burden on the commissioners, and it's not a staff issue in this case. Most 90% of the time, it's an issue of the commissioners getting the first draft out in an appropriate amount of time so that the public can comment on it and people can decide whether or not they want to come in and present, or I shouldn't say present, be available for questions at the commission. So we did put that in there, and we hope that incentivizes the commissioners to sort of move our work ahead a few days, and I think that'll make life better for everybody. And the other point I wanted to make, it's in the document, but that the right to appear only allows somebody to essentially to sit at that table and answer questions. So I don't want people to get all excited that this means sort of like an oral presentation, all of that. We decided that at this point in time is probably not needed in the process. But at a minimum, people can be available to answer questions. And I think that it's worth noting that there are many advisory opinions where we probably won't have any questions. So just want to make sure that the public isn't really excited about talking when there might be times where we don't have anything to talk about at all. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Bowerly?
Thank you. And you didn't get ahead of yourself. I'd be happy to support this draft. I'd have been happy to put my name on it had that opportunity been presented. And I think this did take a lot of work, and we really do appreciate all the consultation that's happened over the past couple of days. And I want to echo Commissioner Hunter's statement about all the staff work that went into this and OGC's first drafting of this. We appreciate all of your thoughts on this. Obviously, there are people in the building who've been doing the AO process a lot longer than some of us. I think Mr. Johnny Levin probably might take the record on that one, but so we appreciate all of your advice on that. And with that, I would be happy to support your the draft 0939.
Thank you. Anyone would like to make a motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move approval of agenda document 09-39 and also authorize the staff to make technical and conforming amendments. They're so thrilled when we remember that and to place it in the Federal Register. That's it.
Mr. Just one more point.
Commissioner again.
Commissioner Hunter, in her comments, reminded me of this. Just to give credit where credit's due, this is the actual original document. This was actually prepared by the Office of General Counsel in response to the hearing and some comments we had made, you know, at various AOs, primarily me, because, well, some of us have the gift of the gab, I guess. And I really appreciate counsel taking the initiative and preparing sort of the working draft, because sometimes you just need to do it and it gets momentum, and then, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. And this is really a case where this wouldn't have happened without our general counsel taking the initiative. So I appreciate that. And I really think it's great when everyone's involved and we do it that way, because it can be done. And it happens more often than people think. There's certain issues where it doesn't, and that's clear, and everyone can read about that and blogs and whatnot, but there's many issues in how to run the agency, that sort of thing, where there really is a lot of common ground here, and I think this is another example of that. And again, I want to thank the chairman for putting it on the agenda and, you know, helping move this along and all that, and I intend to support the motion.
Thank you. Any further comment? And anything further? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. That concludes all of our agenda items, and at this time I'd like to have the honor of turning the mic over to Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had asked the chairman to recognize me at the end of the meeting on a point of personal privilege, and I'm sorry if I'm going to delay everybody's lunch for a few minutes. As everyone has heard, the president has nominated my replacement, and he has had a successful hearing at the Rules Committee, and I anticipate that the Senate will confirm him. It shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that my successor has been nominated, given that my term expired, roughly 2 years ago. But I did start late. I don't know John Sullivan terribly well, but in my discussions with him, he struck me as somebody who is thoughtful and serious, knowledgeable, and a very nice guy. I know the staff is always a little bit anxious about change at the top, but I think you're all really going to enjoy working with him. And I personally wish him the very best of luck and a lot of success in this job. I think this job has been a blast. It's been an interesting journey. It has taken me to places I never expected to go, and I mean that literally. As some of you know, I just returned from Lebanon, where the Carter Center invited me to be part of their election observation mission. And as I was tooling around on the back roads and the windy roads and the hills of northern Lebanon and going into little towns looking for the polling stations with my partner, a terrific woman from Egypt, and our interpreter and our driver, and I couldn't help but think, how did a nice Jewish girl from Queens end up in a place like this? But that was terrific, and I've had other experiences like that have been really mind-boggling and broadening for me in thinking about election issues here. I can pinpoint my very favorite moment here at the commission. It was the day that we passed the internet rule. Everybody knows that's my favorite rulemaking. Michael Turner and I wrote that rule. We literally sat there and rolled up our sleeves and got out our red pens and we wrote that rule. So I feel very proprietary about it, and it's probably my best work here. And I know that because at the end of a months-long, very controversial process where a lot of people were very concerned about what we were going to do or not do, two individuals came up to me at the end of the meeting after the vote, and they had been on opposite sides of the issue, and each of them said to me, "Thank you. That was a great process. It was empowering for us as citizens. We felt that government actually listened and responded, and I really do think it was an example of government at its best, regulating what needed to be regulating and restraining itself where it didn't need to regulate, and that was a great process, and I'm very proud of that. But, of course, the best part of any journey is the people that you meet along the way, and I wanted to publicly thank a number of people that that have been particularly helpful to me along the way. You know, I think I'm not going to say anything about anybody at the table here. Don't worry, I'm not going to embarrass anybody. But I do want to say a couple of words about some of my former colleagues. You know, it was just really great to work with the range of individuals. The you know, somebody with the depth of knowledge of a Dave Mason or a Scott Thomas or a Brad Smith. Man, if you wanted to challenge them, you really had to know your stuff. Brad was a lot of fun to work with. I often disagreed with him, but sometimes agreed with him. And when we were working together on an issue, I think those were some of my fondest memories because he was a lot of fun to work with. Michael Toner and Bob Lenhardt, who came in with a wealth of practical as well as practical experience as well as detailed knowledge of the law, and brought a great deal of seriousness of purpose to the job. I mean, Michael really does stand out, I think, as the most effective commissioner that I've ever seen, both because of his substantive knowledge and his focus and drive, and because he was the most gracious person I think I've ever met. You could walk out of a disagreement with Michael and feel really good about the fact that you didn't persuade him to do what you wanted him to do, because that was just the kind of guy, that is the kind of guy that he is. And all of my colleagues have been, you know, the interactions with them have been quite special to me. But really what I want to talk about and who I most want to thank are the staff of this agency, starting with our incredible general counsel, Tommy Duncan, who has always been such a source of good judgment and wise counsel for me. Even when I didn't agree with you, I always really appreciated everything that you had to say, and I thought it really informed my views. And I don't think Anne Marie's in the room, but our unbelievable head of enforcement. Oh, there you are. Sorry. Looked right past you. You are in the room. And there she is. And she's terrific. Just a consummate professional. Running our enforcement division is such a difficult job and such a big job. And I remember when all these guys showed up and we had this huge backlog and we would have these endless executive sessions just even to discuss how to grapple with the backlog. And Anne-Marie would show up with a stack of notebooks this high, and without even cracking the notebook, she could answer any single question on any case in the docket, which is totally amazing. And both Tommy and Anne-Marie also have young children, and they do that incredible balancing act of being terrific professionals and great moms at the same time, which I really respect. Rosie, how many rulemakings have we done together? I'm afraid to count. We've lost count, but I thank you for the many, many, many hours in Regs Committee. I don't know whether it's because I drew the short straw, but I seem to have spent most of my career here on the Regs Committee. So I appreciate you for all of that. And David Kolker, our great head of litigation. David goes head-to-head with the best litigators in the country. And when I look around the room at all the lawyers in the room in the courtroom, I'm always glad that David's on my team and he's my lawyer. Of course, David and I go back for several decades. We've known each other a really long time. Larry, is Larry here? who was here before. There you are, Larry Calvert, with whom I have wrestled with some very knotty and difficult issues as our head of GILA, and he works on a lot of our ethics issues. And I'm always very challenging on ethics issues, and you never want to argue ethics with an ethics lawyer. It's always a problem. But Larry has put up with me. And I tell you, the guy I would most like to have in a foxhole with me, Greg Baker, our head of CILA, because he is so good-natured, he would keep everybody's spirits up. And I want to thank all of you. Joe Stoltz. I think they must have built the building around Joe Stoltz. He's been here longer than anybody, and is such a source of information for all of us. And not to mention his deadpan sense of humor, which, you know, tends to take people by surprise. You know, you think you're getting all this dry audit stuff, and all of a sudden he'll say something, and kind of, oh, wow, that was funny. And like me, Joe is someone who will go anywhere in the world in the pursuit of democracy to try and help people out and provide advice and counsel and good guidance. And I think if you put Joe Stoltz and Johnny Levin and Bob Biersack in a room together, there is no question about anything in the history of this agency that one of those three guys couldn't answer. And I want to thank all of them for the depth of their knowledge and for being that incredible resource for all of us. I'm going to miss people, and I apologize for that. Mary and Darlene, the secretaries, and Lisa Chapman in the secretary's office, who never let me miss a ballot. And I you know, Lisa's out there somewhere. I appreciate that. John and Debbie and Pat from RAD. You know, I still don't understand how you guys get all those reports reviewed. It's really kind of an amazing thing to me. Patricia Young, our head of public disclosure, who really is so committed to the concept of public disclosure and really gets it, and is a real warrior in the transparency, in the fight for greater transparency. Our terrific congressional relations team, Dwayne Pugh and Amy Pike, always so helpful, really, really terrific. Greg Scott and Kevin Sally and Amy Court and all the folks in info, I will miss the conferences. I recommend this highly to all of our commissioners to go on, particularly on the out-of-town conferences, get out of Washington, talk to people out there in the country who need to grapple with all of these issues, and get to know the staff outside of this building, because it's a very pleasurable and informative experience. Alec Palmer, our head of IT, who I think has brought so many good ideas to help us develop a better website. And, of course, now we're going to build on that and try and collect even more ideas and do an even better job. But, you know, particularly his leadership on the campaign finance maps that we put up that were so popular. All of these folks really are just exemplars of the kind of staff that we have in this building. And obviously I can't name 350 people, but this is an interesting agency. This is a small agency. We get beat up all the time in the press, usually from both sides. But inside the building, I think in part because it's, you know, there are fewer than 400 people who work here, it really does have the feel of a family. People talk about their FEC family, and I just want to say that it's sort of trite to say it's an honor and a privilege to have a position like this, to receive a commission from the president. Oh, and I should thank Tom Daschle, who recommended me to the president for this job. He was a key guy. It's trite but true that it's an honor and a privilege to serve in a position like this and to have this decision-making authority and to be able to do this job. But more than that, it has been for the last 6.5 years, and, you know, for as long as I'm here, you never can tell with the Senate. It has been my honor and privilege to serve with all of you and to be a commissioner and to be part of the FEC family. So I thank every single person in this building for making that experience really special for me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, thank you very much. I know on behalf of all of us in the room that we all recognize how valuable she's been to the commission in terms of being vigilant, articulate, advocate, tenacious. I mean, look at today. and it's all for the good. I mean, what it does really, it makes us a more vibrant commission, and among us, it makes us to take a good look at where we're headed with our views and have second thoughts where second thoughts are needed. It's been a very energetic addition to the way we get our business done. But I think there'll be other times when we can talk about it when it's appropriate, and I don't want to prejudge it. It's that imminent. But in any event, from my own perspective, she was the first person I talked to on the commission when I got my heads up from the senator's office that it was okay to communicate with the commission. They said, call on a loan job, which I did, and I asked for some early tips, and they made a great assistant to Mike French, and it was a very nice start.
Oh,
want to say something about Mike French? I think
oh,
so.
My God, I can't believe I did that. And the people that I really need to thank the most, I should make better notes. The people that I really, really, really need to thank the most, and this was not, this just shows I'm getting old, are the EAs that worked for me, that were my own personal staff and served with such incredible energy and devotion and loyalty and hard work and intelligence. Laurel Shanks, Caroline Goodson, now Carolyn Goodson Parker out in Vancouver with a brand new baby. Rebecca Harvey, Mike French, gone on to bigger and better things at the White House, but I gave him his first job in Washington. Rebecca Harvey, did I mention Rebecca? And of course, Jason Levine and Claire Rajan, who are sitting behind me today. I could not have done anything without these individuals, and I cannot believe, and thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, for saying that and not letting me leave the podium without publicly thanking them, too.
Thank you very much. We will now adjourn. Do you want me to ask you if there are any management administrative matters? Thank you, for the record.